ॐ नमः श्रीयतिराजाय विवेकानन्दसूरये सच्चित्सुखस्वरूपाय स्वामिने तापहारिणे.
वी आर् डिस्कसिङ्ग् दि सिक्स्थ् टाक् आफ् स्वामि विवेकानन्द आन् ज्ञानयोग. टैटिल्ड् इस् दि एब्सल्यूट् अण्ड् दि मेनिफेस्टेशन्. सो फार् वाट् डिड् वि discuss? What is the title? The Absolute and the Manifestation. In other words, Brahman and Jagat. Other words, God and the world. What we discussed so far, the question again and again arises, not exactly in the same form, format, but that is the real meaning. What is the question? How did the infinite become finite? How did God become this world? And with how comes a big question, why? And why does this question come? Because what we call evil exists. Evil means suffering. Suffering is a part of this world. Birth is suffering, growth is suffering, youth is suffering, though people do not realize it. Old age is suffering, death is suffering. There is a profound meaning in all these concepts. Because we are blissfully ignorant, we are neglecting what is the most important thing. Anyway, the question is, always, if at all God created this world, why could not He create a very happy world where everyone is very happy? The question can never be answered, has never been answered before, and will not be answered. For the simple reason, God has never become the world. God appears to be the world, but has never become the world. That's the truth. But that's not our truth. That is the truth of saints, sages who realized God. For us, everything is very, very concrete. Birth is reality, death is a reality, and whatever happens is a reality. So the answer is, God has never become, the infinite has never become, infinite forever remains infinite. That is the essence of whenever we chant that peace mantra, Purnamadaha, Purnamidam. That is infinite, and what we experience, that is also infinite. And so, this infinite has come from that infinite. And if this infinite has come from that infinite, has that infinite become any the less? It remained exactly infinite only. How many infinites can be there? Even that statement, this infinite, means this world, me, has become separated from God. That infinite is a silly type of reasoning. Infinite can never become finite. Therefore, the very root, I, doesn't exist. But yet, the only thing that exists for us is this I. How? Why does it happen? Not why, how does it happen? How does it happen? The absolute looked at through the glass of time, space and causation, appears but never. But there is a big philosophical problem, logical problem. Who is the glass? Where from the glass has come? Swami Vivekananda was a very humorous person. Once a Christian priest was delivering a talk. God created man and woman. The first creation of God was man and woman. Just as a potter makes pots, so he made out of wet clay and put them on the fence for drying. One fellow said, Padre, stop there. You said first God created man and woman. Who created the fence? And the Padre, priest, had to reply and say, one more question like that and you smashes all theology. There is a lot of meaning in this little humorous joke that these questions are valid only from our standpoint. And we do not have it. The nearest analogy we can give to understand even this humorous story is through dream. A lot of this analogy of dream. In dream, you are here and you are dreaming. You dream that you are suddenly waking up in India. Then somehow your unconscious says, I fell asleep in UK. How come I woke up in India? So long as you are in the dream, the question is valid and you seek the answer. But the moment you wake up, what is the status of the dream? On the one hand, you did experience the dream. That was not unreal. dream is unreal, but the experience of dream is not unreal. Your waking state experience is very real. Otherwise, the question itself doesn't arise. And you know, after upon waking up, whatever happened in the dream is just our imaginations. But the question remains, why did it happen? Never happened. But the dream experience itself is a state of experience. You experienced it. Therefore, it is not unreal. That is the idea. So what is the answer? The question and the answer both disappear when we wake up from this finite existence. There is no other answer. Advaita faces a lot of problems because you say, why are we experiencing? Advaita means non-duality. Non-duality means one. Why are we experiencing a separate? Because of Maya. And who created Maya? You said that there is no Maya. Who created Maya? And one more question like that, you smash us all. Advaita theology is not possible. This infinite only appears through the glass of time-space causation. And that's what makes duality. What is duality? Time, space and causation. And that also is called causality. What is causality? The moment we see any object, we do not usually question. We take the answer for granted. What is the question? Suppose you meet a person, you never take it for granted. This person just appeared to you at that moment, fell down from the sky. You did not fall down from the sky. You know that you are a man or a woman and you were born. And you are born through your parents, and your parents were born through their parents, on and on. We take it for granted. You see a plant, and you say, this must have come from a seed. This is called causality. Causality means, this is here because of that. This interrelationship is called causality. And this causality is duality. And this duality means the question, how did the one become many? Non-duality doesn't mean only two. Non-duality means one and the many. Manifestations can be infinite. That's what we discussed in our last class. In this class, what are we going to discuss? First, everything in this world is interdependent. Profound ideas. But I will try to put it in simple words. What is the nature of time, space and causation? Which make us think that we are separate from God, we are separate from each other. And not only that, we think we are ever going to be separate from each other. Then the question comes, is God means the infinite, the absolute, knowable or unknowable? The answer, profound thought in the Kena Upanishad. I will just give you the essence of that statement. If anybody thinks he knows Brahman, he doesn't know. And if anybody knows that Brahman is unknown, he knows. What paradoxical language. A person who thinks doesn't know. And a person who thinks he doesn't know, he alone knows. How do we understand? Upanishads are supposed to be to tell us, give us knowledge in an easily digestible form. And yet they cannot help. Why can't help? Because the nature of that subject is like that. So what is the answer? God is forever unknowable. God is the most knowable. I will deal with that subject when I come to it. Then, what is this Maya? Maya means time, space and causation. What is it? Maya is the struggle to get out of Maya. The only purpose of Maya, the real meaning of Maya is you get out. The struggle. How do we get out? Where do you get out? The Upanishad answers, you have never come. Therefore, you are never going to go anywhere. And nothing outside is going to change. Profound idea. The world is not going to change. How do we get out? By changing ourselves. This is what the Zen Buddhism always emphasizes upon. The change must come from within each one of us. The subject must change. The object is not going to change. And the moment the subject changes, the object also changes. The way is through change within the subject, within I. Means what is the essence? I have to change. Nothing is going to change. But what is Maya? I expect everybody else, the whole world to change, including God. Accepting, I will be like this, God must change. Next point, Swamiji clearly enunciates, Advaita alone is the savior of the world in future. I dealt with this subject at the beginning when I was introducing the Jnana Yoga. Advaita alone can save the world. Because It is only Advaitic vision alone that can reconcile various religions, that can reconcile faith and reason, that can reconcile all the four yogas, and that can reconcile the past, present and future, and it is the only rational religion in the world. Finally, Swamiji gives a hint. Buddha was the greatest saint. Buddhism is one of the greatest religions. And why Buddhism is spreading? The point we need to understand is one of the fastest growing religions in this world today is not Hinduism, not Christianity, not Buddhism, Islam. But why is it spreading so fast? But Swamiji says Buddhism is growing very, very fast. It looks contradictory. No, it's not contradictory. Buddhism is growing. He gives certain reasons and I will deal with it later. So this is the essence of what we are going to discuss today. The first is the answer why the infinite has become the finite. That's a question which has been put, which will be put so long as we do not become one with the absolute, and it can never be answered, and yet it can be answered. What do I mean? I mean that so long as you think you are not infinite, the question can never be answered. When we become one with the infinite, two things dissolve. The question dissolves, the answer also dissolves. The question can be answered. How? There was never any finiteness. So the question itself, the question is not answered, the question is not solved, the question is dissolved. With this background, I would like to read. The first thing Swamiji discusses is the nature of the world. What is the nature of the world? Everything is interdependent. Let me give you a background before we can understand the readings. I am the teacher, you are the students, and we are interdependent. If none of you were there, would I be a teacher? And if I were not there, would you be a student? Man depends upon woman, and young depend upon the old, old depend upon the young. Darkness depends upon light, light depends upon darkness, life depends upon death, and death depends upon life. What a profound thought it is. Life depends upon death. Just I'll give you a hint. Supposing whatever is born goes on living, no death. You know what torture it will be? First of all, your enemy is never going to die. What a torture. Even the very thought that my enemy is not going to die, your unhappiness is never going to die. And we go on growing old. We have to change our idea of what we mean by old. When do we become old? The moment we are born, we become old. One day, 1 hour old, 1 day old, 1 year old, 100 years old. The old age doesn't begin after 70. There are so many other wise people. People are, as you know, divided into two categories. Wise and otherwise people who think old age might start after 80. Might. Old age starts the moment conception takes place. Old age has already started. 1 day, 3 months, 9 months, etc., etc. So the idea that you are, everything is a dualism. That is why non-dualism is the idea, not one and many. We can know one thing, what it is, only by having the background knowledge of what it is not. You will not know what is a man unless there is an idea of woman. You don't know what is human being unless you know what is called an animal, an insect, a plant, a non-living, etc., etc. This is called duality. Not only separate, but separated by time, space and causation, but the opposite idea. Will you know what is daytime if you don't know what is night time? That is why my favorite joke, you know, you go to the sun, say good morning. Good, he understands. Perhaps. What is morning for the sun? There is no morning. We will never know unless we have the opposite idea. This opposites is a profound idea. Because what is our attempt? We will never become old. We don't want to become old. Is it possible to become, remain youth forever? Because the very idea of youth is in contrast to childhood, adolescence and old age, etc. But even more difficult concept to understand. Can we understand what is happiness without unhappiness? Very, very deep idea. You want to be happy. What is the price you have to pay for happiness? unhappy. The more unhappy you are, and when that is removed, the more happy you are. If you are dropped from 2 feet height, you won't get hurt so much. But if you are dropped from 20 feet, your hurt is too much. If you suffer little, your happiness will be. If your unhappiness is 10%, what would be the percentage of your happiness? But if we are talking about it, we are hearing it, but we are not grasping the idea. If we want eternity, then the price is eternal death. Eternal life is possible only if there is eternal death. And that death is both physical and mental and causal. In other words, death of time, space and causation. Interdependence is the law of the whole universe. In asking what caused the absolute, what an error we are making. To ask this question, we have to suppose that the absolute also is bound by something, that it is dependent on something. That which exists by itself alone cannot have any cause. That which is free cannot have any cause. Else, it would not be free, but it is bound. That which has relativity cannot be free. Thus we see the very question why the infinite became the finite is an impossible one, for it is self-contradictory. Supposing we knew the answer. Who is knowing? We are knowing. Who is knowing? I am knowing. If I know through what? Through the mind. Is mind limited or unlimited? It is limited. Whatever we know through the limited, is it limited or unlimited? Therefore, to know the absolute is again a contradiction in terms. That's why the question has never been answered, and Advaita says that the question can never be answered. The next point, important point, is God knowable or unknowable? Here I am using the word God in the sense of absolute. Very important point again. All important points. What is the importance here? Most of the time when we use the word God, it means personal God. God, not infinite God, in a way infinite. How many infinites are there? There are two types of infinites are there. That's why Sri Ramakrishna answers. But very profound. What is it? To the question, is God with form or without form? He gives a profound answer. The answer is, God is with form. God is without form. God is beyond both form and formless. So what does that mean? Whatever idea we have an opposite idea. Man, woman, happiness, unhappiness, life, death, etc. That is by the nature of very things. But that which is beyond both happiness and unhappiness, not available to our mind. God is with form because we have a concept of without form. And God is without form because we have a concept of with form. These two always go together like night and day, good and evil. But the idea that God is beyond both form and formlessness, he is only intellectually saying. That's why Sri Ramakrishna clarifies his point. Everything in this world has become polluted because it has come out of the mouth of man. But Brahman alone has never become polluted. Namo, namo Prabhu, Vakya, Mana, Atita. Hey, see the paradox here. Do you understand the paradox here? Brahman alone is not polluted. This word Brahman came out of whose mouth? Sri Ramakrishna's mouth? Is it polluted or not? Then what does he mean, Brahman? It is a way of human way of conveying through language. But language cannot convey. This is in Sanskrit we call it Shakha Chandra Nyaya. Analogy. Nyaya means analogy. To make something which we do not know understandable, we have to go through what we can understand. So there is at night, one is supposed to show to a person who doesn't know what is the moon. The knowing person, and he takes the person into the outside and shows a tree. Do you see that tree? Yes. And do you see that big branch? Yes. Do you see there are two smaller branches on that big branch? Yes. And do you see a bright shining object shining through those two branches? Yes. And that is called the moon. That is called the moon. So that is what Shakha means branches. Chandra means moon. Showing the moon to a person who doesn't know what is a moon through the analogy of two branches. Shakha Chandra Nyaya. This is acceptable even though it is not, who doesn't know what is called moon? It is, there is another way of understanding, very wonderful idea. The idea is, if there are two objects, then we have to show the difference. This is this, this is this. Left side, right side, above, below, and thick and thin, etc. But if there is only one object, there is no need for any comparison. How many suns are there? So you don't need to show. Do you see the left side sun and right side sun? And sun, what we mean by sun, is that which is at the right side, not at the left side. How many moons are there? And therefore, this is called Rudhi, Pratyaksha. You will see it, and immediately you see that bright object, that is called moon. Its name is moon. If it is only one object, there is no need, only just give a name, special name. That's all. The question is God knowable or unknowable? The answer is, He remains forever unknown and always known. What is the profoundity, what is the illogicity of this answer? Either say is knowable or say is unknowable. Don't go on saying this paradoxical. What does it mean? This is very wonderful idea. When we look at any object in this world, you are looking at me, I am looking at you, any object in this world, you say, I know this object. You may not know completely, but you know the object. This is a table, for example. This is a Swami. You are devotees. Like that. Any object which you don't know is not an object so far as you are concerned. The moment you hear it, see it, taste it, touch it, feel it, it is an it's already you have the knowledge. You know this is it. Can you know God like that? You cannot know. Because who is asking the question? Not you, the God. What is that God here? That consciousness within us, which is indivisible from any other consciousness. How many consciousnesses are there? There are no different small consciousness, big consciousness, brown consciousness, white consciousness, black consciousness, intelligent consciousness, unintelligent consciousness. No, the consciousness is only one. And therefore, when we say, do I know God? It is like God asking, do I know myself? Do you see the paradox? Have you ever asked, do I exist? This is the answer. If you can understand this statement, do I exist? Do you exist or not? Even to ask the question, do I exist or not? You question after existence or before existence. You have to be present. That's why Ramana Maharshi gives a profound answer. You can doubt everything, but you cannot doubt the doubter. Because the doubter has to be existent before he can even doubt. It is like this. Do I exist? That question is illogical because you won't ask at all. In that sense, all of us know that I am. The problem is not I am. The problem is what is added after I am. What is self-knowledge? I am. Whatever you add. The moment you add, I am a woman, I am a man, I am young, I am old, I am born, I am going to die, all those things are the problematic. When you can reach that state of I am, remove everything. And by the way, that is called, whatever comes after I am, the removal of that thing is called yoga. Yoga, chitta vritti nirodha. Let me explain it again. What is yoga? It is complete cessation of every thought in the mind. It, by this very statement, presumes that there is a person who says, I have a mind which is full of thoughts and I want to rid of all these thoughts. I plus thoughts. Remove all thoughts. That is called samadhi. What remains? I remains. Is it not? I plus thoughts. You remove, what is yoga? Chitta vritti nirodha. Remove all thoughts. Then what remains? I. And what is the nature of that I? You can't tell because you don't have a mind. There is no thought about it. And yet, I am is ever experienced truth. Day and night, I am in the waking state, I am in the dream state, I am in the dreamless state. There is no time when I am is not there. But what happens? I am in the waking state, I identify with the body and everything. I am in the dream state, I identify with my subtle body and everything that I see. What do I do in deep sleep causal state? I identify and say that I am and I do not know. I am plus I do not know.
That is the bondage. But it's very happy bondage. So long as you are in that state, I am and I don't know anything. I don't know husband, I don't know wife, I don't know children, I don't know office. You are very, very happy person. That is why it is called Anandamaya Kosha. This is what Swamiji is trying to explain. Profound philosophical idea. Forget about Advaita. Philosophy. Rationality. Let me read. What Advaita says is that God is not knowable through the sense organs or through the mind, but He is more than knowable. More than knowable. God is more than known. This chair is known. But God is intensely more than that, because in and through Him we have to know this chair itself. He is the witness, the eternal witness of all knowledge. Whatever we know, we have to know in and through Him. He is the essence of our own self. He is the essence of this ego, this I. And we cannot know anything excepting in and through that I. Therefore, you have to know everything in and through that I, which is really Brahman. To know the chair, you have to know it in and through God. I will try to simplify this statement. This is the example. You are seeing me. Before you see me, there must be two things. First of all, you must exist, isn't it? If you do not exist, you will not know what is the other's existence. First of all, you will have to exist. Secondly, you must have a mind where consciousness, awareness is percolating to even to question. So you go through two states before you even come to know the answer. First, you exist. What is it? I am. Second, I have a mind. That I am with a mind, two separate statements. And through that mind, who is questioning? I am is not questioning. It is that mind is questioning. Who is this person I see? What is this object I see? This is what Swamiji is trying to tell. Whenever we see a chair, the first thing is chair is existing. I am also existing. Whose existence comes first? Chair or me? My existence comes first. And then there is a mind says, I cognize. Whenever we cognize any object, again two processes take place. And they are so intimately connected, super glued, it is impossible for us, unless you are a thinking person, to separate them. What is it? The first thing is, I see there is something. That means what? You are recognizing the existence of something. That is the first thing that comes. There is something. Do I know what that something is? And then comes, it is something, it is plus chair, table, etc. etc. I hope you are getting the idea. Before we question, there are two states. I am and I want to know through the mind. And whatever I want to know, two states. First you recognize, what is it? I see something. If you don't see something, even the desire to know what it is never arises in our mind. And then you first recognize its existence. Who recognizes that existence? My existence recognizes that existence. And after my existence recognizes that existence, then the duality comes. What is the duality? I am a man. I am a human being. And therefore, that is not a human being, or that is another human being. That division comes. So long as I am, there is no division. But the moment I think I am something else, the question comes, what is the other thing? This is what Swamiji means. The subject is ever known. The object is ever unknown. What we know? Attributes. What is the table? You know, it is flat, it is round, it is that height. That's all you know. But what is the real object? Even from a physical, scientific point of view, you will not know. Let me put it this way. You look at this table. You ask a wood one, what is it? What does it say? Food. You ask a human being, what is it? He says it is wood. You ask a physicist with a powerful electronic microscope, what does he say? It is nothing but energy. And you ask a God man, what is it? What does he say? Who is right? Only the God man is right. The other three answers, temporarily right. Because when the woodworm becomes carpenter, man, his answer changes. When the man becomes a scientist, his answer changes. When the scientist becomes a saint, his answer changes. Thereafter, it remains unchanged. That is the final answer. All this changeableness is called sublation. What is the sublation? Not negating the old knowledge, but you expand your old knowledge into new knowledge, which includes the old knowledge, but contains much more. This is called sublation. First I see, I am different, you are different. Then you see, I am a human being, you are a human being. Then you see, I am living, you are also living. Then you see, I am existing and the wood is existing, river is existing, mountain is existing. The division between the living and non-living totally disappears. At that level, how many things are there? At the level of I exist, everything is existence. How many things are there? I hope you are able to follow. The more generalization we come to, the division, duality, slowly expands until all dualism merges in non-dualism. That's what Swamiji means. But how to describe that God? Oh, this is Upanishadic language. Upanishad uses several linguistic models. Many times I dealt with this subject in my past talks, but I will give you three examples. Positive description, negative description, and paradoxical description. What is the positive? This person is near to me, so this is positive. This person is not there, that is the negative. That is called negative description. This object is both man and object. This object is both near and far. This object is moving and non-moving. This object is inside and outside. This is called paradoxical. What is paradox? In our normal day-to-day life, either something is near or something is far. Or something is black, something is white. Something is inside, something is outside. Something is moving, something is not moving. I'm trying to simplify this idea. Here is a table. Is it moving or non-moving? It is both moving and non-moving. From our this time point of view, it is completely non-moving. If it is moving, do you know what happens? I will not be able to speak to you. All my efforts would be how to balance myself. Suppose this chair starts dancing. What do you think I will be doing? And your chair starts dancing. What do you think you will be doing? Will I be talking? Will there be any communication? Just settle down. But from the physicist's point of view, there is nothing called static. Everything is moving at what speed? Mind-boggling speed. This is science. I'm not talking even about philosophy. And that is the truth about it. This is, in every Upanishad we get it, but from the Isavasya Upanishad, this is the answer. Tadejati tannayjati taddure tadvantike tadantarasya sarvasya tadu sarvasyasya bahyata. That moves, doesn't. The Atman moves and doesn't move. It is near, very near, and is very far. And it is inside everybody, and it is outside everybody. This is called paradoxical language. So Shankaracharya, he gives beautiful explanation. He says, the person who knows, it is here, and it is everything. The person doesn't know, where is God? Is he here or outside? For a person who knows, he is right here and everywhere. For a person who doesn't know, God is very, very, very far off. For a person who knows, God is moving and God is also non-moving. But for a person who doesn't know, either God is moving or God is not moving. He cannot conceive of the opposite things. For a person who knows, he is inside, he is outside, because infinity is inside or outside. It is everywhere. But for a person who is ajnani, avidyavan, for him, either God is inside or he is outside. He cannot be both. That is called avidya. This is what Swamiji is telling. This God is infinitely nearer to us than the chair, but yet is infinitely higher. Neither known nor unknown, but something infinitely higher than either. He is yourself. Who would live a second? Who would breathe a second in this universe if that blessed one were not filling it? Then the next thing Swamiji says, Tattvamasi. Where is that God? Don't ask where is that God, because you are asking, where am I? Where am I? I am here. I am not somewhere else. No, he is a madcap who says, where am I? Who am I? Where am I? That's what we are asking actually. The moment you say, who am I? You are asking, I don't know anything about myself. For instance, in memory, you are objectifying many things, projecting them out of yourself. All memory, all the things which I have seen and which I know are in my mind. The pictures, the impressions of all these things are in my mind. And when I would try to think of them, to know them, the first act of knowledge would be to project them outside. This cannot be done with God, because He is the essence of our souls. We cannot project Him outside ourselves. Here is one of the profoundest passages in Vedanta. He That is the essence of your soul. He is the truth. He is the self. And thou art that, O Shvetaketu. This is a passage from Chandogya Upanishad, 6th chapter. The instructions to Shvetaketu by his own father. This is what is meant by thou art God. You cannot describe him by any other language, excepting thou art that. Tattvam asi. Let me expand it very little. You are seeing me. Are you seeing me or not? Naturally, the answer is yes, you are seeing me, I am seeing you. Do you know what is the truth? You are not seeing me, I am not seeing you. I am remembering you and recognizing you. That's why the very word recognize. Recognize means what? First time is cognition. Thereafter, recognition. What is recognition? I recall, I saw this person, I know this person. This is Swami Dayatmananda. First time if you know, will you know I am Swami Dayatmananda? You will ask me, Swami, what is your name? What do you do here? Next time you don't ask me. This is the simple truth we are working. If your memory for some reason goes away, this is called amnesia, you will not know anything. You can't recognize anything. That is the problem with what is that disease? Dementia, all these things, you can, it doesn't recognize anything. And it is a terrible thing because if I don't recognize anything, I will not know who am I. I am a father, I am a mother, I am a swami, I am a teacher, I am this and that. Complete, it all depends upon other memories. Memory is gone. In a way, it is a state of bliss. In another way, it is the most terrible thing to happen to any person in this world. But as we say, ignorance is bliss. That is the most blissful state. Because the person doesn't remember all the hurts, all the harms, all the sufferings he had gone through. That is a great thing. That is what like deep sleep. So Swamiji is telling that you know everything to only through one way. Tattvamasi. Very deep idea. We are talking about time, space and causation. And Swamiji says two ideas about time, space and causation. First of all, they are not objects like the chair. Time is not an object. Space is not an object. Causation is not an object. These are frameworks through which we know an object. And we can never know any object excepting through the framework of time, space and causation. First of all, what Swamiji says is, first, time and space and causation are interdependent upon each other. Time depends upon space and causation. And space depends upon time and causation. And causation depends upon time and space. Simple example, you ask what time the accident happened. You heard the news, accident happened. This is an example. What time? What time is you have in mind? Where did it happen? Why did it happen? Can you think of space without time? No. I am just giving the answer. Time, space and causation are interdependent. That means when one is there, the other two are invariably present. Second, every cognition of any object, including our body and mind, depends upon time, space and causation. Keep these two in mind. Now the question is, what are time, space and causation? Advaita means non-duality. There are not two but one. Yet we see that here is a proposition that the absolute is manifesting itself as many through the veil of time, space and causation. Therefore, it seems that here are two, the absolute and Maya. What is Maya? Time, space and causation. Another name for time, space and causation is Maya. There are two, absolute and Maya. It seems apparently very convincing that there are two. If there are two, is it non-dualism or dualism? It is dualism. To this, the Advaitist replies, it cannot be called two. To have two, we must have two absolute independent existences. One of the lesser examples we give, you are walking in the sunlight and there is a shadow. Tell me, does the shadow has an independent existence apart from you? If it has an independent existence, you can go away and the shadow should be there. Is the gold a necklace? Are they two independent objects or one? What is the answer? If gold and ornament are two separate things, the goldsmith can keep the gold and give you only the ornament. What a wonderful thing it is. That's not going to happen. Where there is gold, there would be the ornament. What is the relationship? Who is dependent upon whom? The gold is never dependent upon the ornament. Because the ornament can change. For example, the necklace can change into a chain, A chain can change into a ring, the ring can change into a bangle, it can change anyway. But what remains unchanged? Gold. This is what Advaita Vedanta want to say. The relationship between God and Absolute and this world is like, God is like gold and this world is like an ornament. The ornament is unreal in this sense. It is not truly unreal. Because if it is unreal, you don't even see the gold. If ornament is unreal, you don't even see the gold. If the rope is absent, do you see the snake? Will you see the snake? The rope, something must be there. And that is eternal. That is permanent. That is absolute. What a profound idea Swami is trying to give. But there are not two. To have two, we must have two absolute independent existence, which cannot be caused. In the first place, space and causation cannot be said to be independent existences. Time is entirely a dependent existence. It changes with every change of mind. Time is relative. That's what Einstein has discovered. If you are traveling at mind-boggling speed, time, this what we call space, bends. When a massive object is passing through, space seems to bend. It's a mind-boggling idea. Even we don't understand. These are pure ideas, very, very abstract idea. That is the truth. Do parallel lines meet? For the elementary student, parallel lines never meet. And for the advanced student, parallels do meet in infinity. These are seems to be completely opposed paradoxical ideas, but that is the truth of it. What is the point? Don't stand in one state and ask questions about the other state. That is important. All these questions, whether the absolute is manifested or not, from which point of view? We are asking from our point. And we cannot help because we see everything changing. Therefore, the idea, how did the infinite become finite? That means, how did the infinite change into finite thing? That is because we see everything changing in this world, including myself. And how do you know? Because I am changing, therefore I observe change. I exist, therefore I cognize existence. I have chit, awareness, therefore I cognize everything. This is the beautiful thing. What Swamiji says, it's very profound idea. You will have to go and mull over it. Time, space and causation are not objects. First, no object can be seen excepting through the lens of time, space and causation. The corollary of this is, if you can manage to see any object without the intervening glass of time, space, causation, what do you see? You see a table. What do you see? God. You see another human being. What do you see? God. You see at your own body. What do you see? God. You see nothing but God. First point is, time, space and causation is only ideas, framework of mind and not independent object. They are not independent from each other. Time depends upon space and causation, etc. And they are dependent, every object is dependent upon time, space and causation. To reveal itself, I am young, I am old, I am thin, I am fat, etc. Very interesting concept. What is it that makes an illustration? Swamiji gives an illustration. There is a wave on the ocean. The wave is the same as the ocean certainly, and yet we know it is a wave and as such different from the ocean. This is the illustration. What Swamiji is trying to tell, what is the relationship between the absolute and manifestation, between God and the world, Brahman and Jagat? What is the relationship between an ocean and the wave? What is a wave? Is it water or not? If it is the water, then what is the difference? What is the ocean? Nothing but water. What is the wave? Nothing but water. As water, are they one or different? Absolutely one. But why do you call this ocean and why do you call this as wave? What is the difference? The difference is small and big. Beautifully illustrated, if a fish from a small river fell into an ocean, somehow reached ocean, and it met a fish which was born and grown up in the ocean. And they were very happy. They introduced themselves. Who are you? Who are you? And then the small, oh, what a wonderful thing, this ocean. The fish said, yes, this is wonderful, but what do you mean by ocean? It never knew what is the ocean. This is the ocean. The small fish replied, this is ocean? What do you mean? This is water. Because it never knew what is small body of water and what is bigger. What is the difference between a river and an ocean? Not water. Smallness and bigness. And the fish from the ocean never knew what was small, and therefore it is impossible for it to know. Where do you sleep at night? Ask the sun. What would be the answer? What do you mean by night? What do you mean by sleeping? Because it never does anything. Ask a saint, what do you do in your sleep? What is the real answer? What are you talking about? Because we go through waking, dream and sleep. Do you think a realized soul also goes to it? We make profound mistakes. Sri Ramakrishna, oh, you had wonderful dream, you had wonderful sleep. What do you mean by? Sri Ramakrishna, you are talking from your body point, mind point. Sri Ramakrishna has a waking state, a dream state and a deep sleep state. You know what Swami Turiyananda said to this question? I am ever witnessing the waking, dream and even dreamless state. My question to you in this talk today before I complete. When a person is witnessing, can you call him a waker or dreamer or a sleeper? Give me answer. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.